welcome to the All Japan Women's Destiny podcast. I'm your host, JD. Welcome to another episode as we go through the history of All Japan Women's Professional Wrestling through the classics episodes that you can find on various places of the internet. I vastly encourage to follow along and learn and enjoy the history of this just awesome women's wrestling promotion of the past. This is a spin-off in conjunction with the Red Leaf Retrocast. That is the proper episode where these come from. We hope you enjoy our audio and our discussions over the various wrestlers and the matches in which you go through the ages. If you like what you hear and you want more content, please consider checking out the Patreon. That is patreon.com/redleafretrocast, all one word, where we also cover LLPW, various other women's wrestling promotions of the past, and the project that the whole reason it exists is the Joshi 2010s journey, where we go through coming out of the dark ages of Joshi professional wrestling and really learning and having fun with wrestlers that we're very familiar with to this day, to ones that we may have missed out on. I hope you enjoy the audio you're about to hear covering AJW. And if you want more, please, again, consider signing up to the Patreon and leaving us reviews over at iTunes, Spotify, and the like, all your favorite podcasting outlets in which you listen to AJW and the Red Leaf Retrocast. Enjoy. There we go, AJW Classics. It's episode 99, Road to the Dome, Road to Big Egg, Wrestle Universe. There you go. We're getting there. One more episode to go, and I can't even begin to describe the thought process of how I'm ever going to cover the Big Egg show. I mean, shit, there's an entire podcast dedicated to that show. Anything and everything has at least covered that show one time. Varying degrees of depth, varying degrees of what it's all about. And, shit, the classics for the next four episodes is covering that show. And I've run it through my mind. Am I only going to cover a couple matches? Am I just going to go over attendances, how much money it made, how long it was? Or what I'm really thinking about is, am I going to cover it for one episode for how long I should go in depth into it and how I want to, and then utilize the next three episodes to do some very, I think, important historical stuff that wasn't covered in the classics, such as an entire episode dedicated to the Beauty Pair in response to the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame season. How much am I going to concentrate on a couple other historical figures of kind of that 1970s era? And honestly, I think that's the direction I'm going to take this once Big Egg is covered for the nice little century mark show of me covering the classics. Because look, this has been a journey, guys. You know, I started this essentially not knowing enough about AJW or even historical Joshi the way say many others are. I have definitely felt like I've developed a lot of context to a lot of this rather than just reading and watching randomly. I mean, hell, there's a lot of people out there that have watched the boom period of the 90s, some top-end matches, and kind of moved on. You know, or maybe have done surface-level research to a little bit of in-depth research to the early to mid-90s in this particular era, And I really wanted to learn and go about this a different way. And now that I've reached kind of this point and peak of time, that I feel pretty comfortable with a good historical context and contextual knowledge to be able to, you know, vote in the Observer Hall of Fame and know things like the Beauty Pair and Manami Toyota and Bull Nakano's reign and all of these things. And yes, there are still gaps that I need to fill, such as the fall of Joshi. And certainly have a huge gap in knowledge through the early and mid-2000s. But I'm filling these things in. We're all watching and learning and reading together in this sense. And I'm very proud of what I've been able to do and what I've been able to really record and catalog for anybody who comes across HAW Destiny, Red Leaf Retrocast, and the like to get the same context. And you know, when you're a guy who puts out his opinions, obviously not everybody's going to agree with anything and everything, but hopefully it can at least get you and inspire others to learn and search out these shows, watch these shows, and see what's happened. So if you want more Joshi historical knowledge and context, obviously there's the Joshi 2010s Journey Out of the Dark Ages over on the Patreon, patreon.com/redleafretrocast. I'm into early 1995 of LLPW. No one covers LLPW quite like me, that's for sure. No one ever has, to my knowledge. And I'm getting to some very interesting times. And LLPW post Big Egg is certainly an interesting time. We'll get to the Kandori fallout clearly on probably the next episode. But in terms of this one, we are on episode 99. It is from Nagoya, October 22nd, 1994. In the kind of heart of Tag League here, you'd never guess based on what's happened. But look, 1994 certainly has not been about any sort of these tournaments that AJW has done for many, many years now. The full-on punt tactic that was the Grand Prix of 1994 certainly seemed like a waste of time. And Tag League just so happens to feel like an in-name-only situation of, it's that time of year, we run this thing, that's it. And we certainly have seen a similar circumstance, at least in the aspect of what matters at the time in Stardom, with Rossi Ogawa and how he's managed a very whacked-out schedule in 2023 with the punt of the Cinderella. And certainly looks like a punt of the Tag League, but, you know, maybe that's by design because of what the promotions felt of how they're going to run, how much they're going to run, what the entity of Bushiroad requires or wants, or simply what schedule they want to do in order to hit all these different prefectures and provinces, if you will, states, whatever you want to call these sections of countries. From wherever you're from, AJW isn't too far off from kind of these scheduling tactics and whatnot with what the Big Egg Joshi show is going to do. The Tokyo Dome is a major mark on history for women's wrestling and AJW in particular, and it's certainly affecting other promotions, FMW, LLPW, JWP, and the like. Where their Michinoku Pro gets involved, a men's promotion. There's a lot of context that we all need to know. But here we are in Nagoya. A claimed attendance of capacity, not a sellout, but capacity, 4,120. And I kind of want to put this in a little perspective. Okay, so I'm going to pull up my annual Joshi Stats form here that I've kept up with over the last number of years. And particularly, I want to point to some Stardom shows as we begin to kind of compare, as we'll talk about as the years go on, What are we quantifying stardom compared to AJW? Modern era versus, well, the golden age, if you will. We have the 70s, 80s, and now the 90s, right? Very different times where the 70s was very beauty pair ridden. The 80s was very crush gals ridden. And the 90s, we'll call it work rate ridden. How about that? While stardom really got their beginning of their, we'll put it in very loose quotes, boom, during a global pandemic. But in terms of what we're seeing here, stardom's run 2022 with the post-COVID restrictions not quite released and 2023 have. If we look at their big Nagoya shows, you know, they're not putting 4,000 seats or even 3,000 seats in these things, right? We're talking strictly outside Tokyo, okay? So a little context here. Stardom's been trying to get Nagoya for many years now as another place to draw, okay? And in terms of AJW, whether you want to believe the 4,000 number or not, you know, let's go with a 3,000 number. How about that? You know, inflation minus guesstimate inflation. Okay. So AJW is hot. Stardom is, we'll say, getting hot, at least, certainly in the context of modern Joshi, right? But in 2022, Midsummer Champions Nagoya, 1,064. Okay. Not quite a 3,000 number, right? And then if we cut to 2023. I don't think they've even ran a big Nagoya show when it comes to mind. They've ran Osaka, which is a totally different animal, I would say. But we do have... No, we got Aichi. Yeah, we got Aichi when it comes to 2023. I believe they ran Aichi in 2022 as well. Let's see. Yeah, they got 1353 for Stardom X Stardom. And then for the Triangle Derby, 1,071. And then a most recent show in Aichi, Nagoya Golden Fight, 1,315. So none of these things are impressive numbers. It is on par with stardom in this modern era. But they got a long ways to go outside of that, you know, Cork and Hall, Oda City sense, if you will. I know they're different parts of the city. Hell, I'll even throw in Yoyogi in there, okay? Yokohama's a big Joshi historical venues. So this puts in context the difference in how hot and popular these two promotions are and what our sort of expectations should be. And I really think a 3,000-esque number is kind of what I've been talking about as a bullet point for a good amount of success, right? And I really think AJW in 90, 93, 94, even point to 95, as we'll get to, that 3,000 number is a good, I think a good marker of success for women's wrestling, because it's really never been quite to that extent. Yes, you can kind of point to the 10,000 plus numbers, but wrestling kind of has a hard time getting to those numbers in general. That's when you're really in a hardcore boom period, right? We're seeing that with WWE in this era currently, where they're selling out television shows and 10,000 plus numbers. AEW pay-per-views get to the 10,000 plus numbers. WCW in the 90s and WWF for their television shows were clipping at the 10,000 mark quite often. Okay, when it comes to AJW, when it comes to their major shows, they're getting to that point every now and again. I'm more of the mind that if you can pull a clip of 5,000 plus for women's wrestling, because I honestly do believe women's wrestling is much harder to draw on in the historical sense, the gender sense. Women's sports in general there is an increase in want, but there's always going to be a tougher factor to consider. So wanted to begin with that. I know that may not be what you're looking to hear when it comes to an AJW podcast or historical context, but modern context, I believe, does warrant some context as well in what we're looking for. Because as we go forward, there's going to be comparisons to the past, right? In what was popular, what used to be popular, what used to be hot, okay? So on this Nagoya show, we are with a main event of an IWA All-Pacific title match with Manami Toyota and Takako Inoue, hence the music played at the start. And then we got a bustling undercard, some singles matches, but can't help but notice the tag league is not the emphasis on this. So why is that relevant? And why did I bring up Stardom? Well, Stardom's running tag league as we speak, as I record this, and they put a piss-poor number out there, and maybe, just maybe, if you want to draw some attendance, draw some interest, because to me, why, and that's been going around a lot lately in the sphere of professional wrestling, is why do wrestling fans care about attendance? Why do sports fans care about attendance at all? Just watch the games, they say. Watch the matches. Well, to me, it's a very interesting indicator on what's popular with the fans. Why didn't the fans want to go? And then when you look at the card, well, it's like, well, shit, of course. If the fans aren't going, if the attendance is in half year over year or doubled, I think it's important to look at that and say, okay, well, this is what's on the paper in front of you. That's why, right? So clearly, to me, as we lead up to Big Egg, the promotion's hot. We're in Aichi here, Nagoya, very comparable city as we look to 30 plus years later kind of deal. And we have an Aja Kong Yamada semi-main event. Aja Kong's the champion. If you want to kayfabe yourself into believing that it's a title match, go for it. So it's an interesting singles match. We have Reggie Bennett on the card in a singles match against Kyoko Inoue. That could raise some interest, right? In the main event, we have a big-time title match with a rising star of Manami Toyota, who's just come across a Grand Prix quote-unquote win with the right to go to the tournament at Big Egg. So if you want to contextualize this in the 90s, this is an interesting card. And I could totally see why, when the promotion's very attractive right now in the 90s, and we're heading to one of the biggest women shows of all time, the biggest, then, yeah, this is a show I would see myself going to if I was a fan at the time. Well, on the flip side, we look to some of these modern era cards and, you know, are you really trying to get the 3000 number? I got the sense on this card, AJW was really trying to get that 3000 plus number. And their capacity selling, 4,120, believe that number or not. I think it's definitely inflated, but, you know, it's still a good number. And that's that's where we came to get the show. So this is All Japan Women Destiny, AJW Classics. If you're listening on Red Leaf Retrocast, thank you. Let's get into this card. So, this is important. And I usually don't do this, but we have a rookie match to start off. Now, I'm not going to focus on, obviously, all the drop kicks and botched moves and all that, but it is important to notice the names, okay? We got Kumiko Maekawa, so Big May, as some fans will call, Misei Watanabe, Miss Genki, right? Yoko Takahashi, not to be confused with Nanai Takahashi. She's coming close, guys. She's debuting any day now on the Classics. Teaming with Nobue Endo, okay? So we got four new, I just mentioned a fifth new name coming on the up and up. Well, we even have Rita Mata in the undercard with Asari, okay? We'll get to that match in a second, but so, besides the fact that Misai Watanabe and Kumiko Maekawa defeat the very not-as-good team of Endo and Takahashi, the important factor coming out of this is, yes, we have a rookie influx coming. Why does that matter? Well, throughout late 93, throughout 1994 here, this AJW roster has seen a couple injuries, very bad injuries that have taken talent out to early retirement. Bat Yoshinaga comes to mind. We just had the return of the Tarantula One, if you will. And unfortunately, if you know your history and you've looked into this in the future, the future early retirement of Saki Asagawa. Now, that's not coming for a little bit of time, but the influx of rookies and young talent is going to matter because as we turn the corner post Big Egg, we've seen throughout 93-94 the continuation of this interpromotional quote-unquote warfare, interpromotional matches, and that's why this is dubbed kind of the interpromotional era of this boom period, right? Multiple Joshi promotions coming together to put on matches. Hell, just last year we saw LLPW and JWP have their biggest shows of the year mixed in with AJW talent, okay? Well, the AJW roster has been run ragged, and it's a small roster. Don't get me wrong. This is a small roster. It's not as big as people tend to remember it as, right? You know, Stardom has, you know, X, what, 40 wrestlers under contract right now, and that's a good, decent amount, right? And that's even in the news right now, at least with discussions of how injured the Stardom roster is. And, you know, there's 4, 5, 6 people out. Okay. Still got 30 wrestlers under contract, basically. They can fill out. I'm not worried about that. What's more noticeable is this AJW roster and what we've seen in 94. It's a lot of repeat cards. It's a lot of repeat matches. It's a lot of the same talent facing each other over and over again. There's a reason why Reggie Bennett's been brought in. You know, there's a reason why they're still bringing in a lot of talent from other promotions to kind of fill these cards out because they need to, right? It's a need, not a want. When I look at Stardom in the sense, kind of pulling similar tactics, it seems like more of a want than a need. And the want is to, well, get other wrestlers some time off kind of deal. And you still highlight your stars. Because AJW here is still highlighting a lot of Aja Kong, a lot of Manami Toyota, a lot of Kyoko Inoue at this time. Even Yumika Hota is getting some shine in 94. Because we do have Bull Nakano calling it a day, if you will. Akira Hokuto is calling it a day, if you will. They're two biggest stars at this time. So they need to kind of get new talent on the up and up and fill out these things in different ways. So AJW is a need. I really get the feeling Stardom's more of a want, right? Because lessons learned from history, if you will. So here we go. The influx of rookie talent will play a big factor as we head into 1995. So keep that in mind. I have discussed a good chunk of that on the LLPW reviews as I'm already in early 1995 there. And, you know, we'll come up quick with these AJW reviews to pass that up. So the second match is Rita Mata defeating Chiprito Sari. Not a whole lot of high-flying from Osari in this one. It was very much more grounded, more simplistic. Nice little undercard match. Rita Mata gets the win via a backslide. Not the best executed, but backslide win nonetheless. And I've already spoken about the rookie injection, so no need to continue that here. The classics go straight to Kyoko Inoue, Reggie Bennett. I did seek out some of the other undercard stuff, and not much to say there other than LCO defeated Tomoko Watanabe and Yumika Hota. This match was fine. And then Mariko Yoshida, the Tarantula One, and Saki Asagawa. That's an interesting team. Kind of harping back to before the pre-Yoshida neck injury. They defeat the very underwhelming team of Kari Ito and Suzuka Minami. 17 minutes. I thought this was pretty boring for the most part. If you go to the Wrestling Observer newsletter, one big Dave Meltzer gave it 3 3/4. And to me, that's a product of how much women's wrestling is getting around. He's clearly covering it and watching it more. He's getting those tapes. How does this compare to the modern era? You know, I think a lot of the modern era tags are better than matches like this. So different grading scale, if you will. Now we get to the Kyoko Inoue Reggie Bennett, which was covered on the Classics. It went 10 minutes, 38 seconds. And I thought this was a very acceptable, like, 2.5, 3-star match, but solid and simple enough. I had no issue with this, right? This is a sense where it's like you watch the show, you're enjoying the show. If you went to the show, you're like, yeah, it was a satisfying match. And it didn't need to do anything other than what they did to get over it. I think they still put in a good amount of effort. It's a weird thing to say, but sometimes I don't need the 4-star plus matches on a show in like Nagoya when you can have a big ass pay-per-view next month. And look, big eggs around the corner, and we got bigger matches to fry on the upper card. Okay? So Bennett looks strong. Kyoko's over. That much is clear. I could do without Kyoko Inoue trying submission moves on bigger opponents. I don't know why she just insists on doing that in all her matches. I guess the idea is if she manages to pull it off once, she'll get a big reaction. And she kind of put Reggie Bennett in a surfboard, but didn't get her up, couldn't. And the crowd sort of reacted well enough. You know, she's still trying these things. But like the finish, Reggie Bennett's going for a big powerbomb. Kyoko does a sunset roll out of it. And she ends up pinning her. So, in terms of the Classics, we got two roll-up victories in a row. In terms of the show, that did not happen. But enjoyed the Kyoko simple fist pump. She's like, yeah, I got the victory, brother. Yeah. And, you know, not a big flamboyant, in-your-face kind of win. But it is someone who cares that she got the win. You know what I mean? And she wasn't, like, totally destroyed. And it didn't come across as a fluke victory. It was just simply, we got the job done, and I got the win. I like that. And we move on to Aja Kong, who is... she's getting over much strongly. Or stronger, I should say, Aja Kong. It's very noticeable now, at this point in time. And definitely get the feeling that Aja Kong is now finally kind of reaching a peak that she really wasn't at... over the last like year and a half, even though that she's been champion for a good chunk of time, and the story was told with the Bull Nakano kind of putting her over and getting her into the next generation, Aja Kong never felt like the star. Not until kind of about now, if you know what I mean. She's finally getting a focus, because I've said this in the past. You know, during all those interpromotional things, it was more about Akira Hokuto and Bull Nakano. Aja Kong was, you know, third from the top, defending the title or not. It was more about Aja Kong in the big bull matches, if you will. Her against Kansai, her against Hota, her against Eagle Sawai, and they never delivered to the extent. And honestly, none of those wrestlers were really at their peak yet, and they're not pulling off peak performances, right? They weren't the big matches. The big matches were whatever Akira Hokuto was doing. And now that we have Aja Kong, look, she's still second from the top on this show. She's not defending the red belt. Manami Toyota is. Throwing that out there, but she's against Toshio Yamada. And this match was built well. Aja Kong came out with the trash can, pumps that thing in the corner. It came into some play, but it was more about Aja Kong and Toshi Yamada having a good strike match. And Kong beat this woman's ass for a good chunk of time, and it built up well to a Yamada comeback. As soon as Yamada came off the ropes and hit the big flipping enziguri thing that she does, seemingly kind of a la Will Ospreay-esque. Wonder if anyone's asked Will Ospreay if he came up with his little flip kick, you know, watching an old Toshio Yamada clip. Maybe not, but worth an ask. Maybe I'll DM him. I doubt he'll respond. But, yeah, it all built up to that. Yamada got some offense off, and then as she was going for her big gory bomb and everything, wasn't able to get it off at all. Kong kind of slips out, counters, and as Yamada's coming off the ropes for a big kick of her own, Kong catches her with a big hurricane and pins this woman. So this was real good. This was real good. I'm not quite at the 4-stars level, but, you know, 3.5, 3.75, I'm kind of around there. So good match, and it's keeping Aja very strong, and I think this is where Yamada is. I can't disagree with the positioning. You know, yes, she could probably still have a good like tag title run and those kinds of things, but LCO is definitely the focus for that area currently now. Could Yamada kind of fill out some space there? Maybe there's an All-Pacific run in her, maybe, but you know, you can kind of pick who is going to be at the top and who's not at this time, and I kind of agree with what I've seen and performances, and just Yamada's been passed by. I think Yamada is slipping into that Suzuka Minami type territory, and sometimes that's okay. Could they tell more stories with Yamada, especially with the Minami Toyota rivalry? Could they build off this for Yamada to have some big feud with Aja Kong? Sure. Could there be something with Hota even? Also sure. There's always a chance. There's always an opportunity. But in its current standing, I kind of agree with a lot of the hierarchy booking, if you will, with AJW at this point in time. And we get to our main event. Minami Toyota to Kakao Inoue for the IWA and All Pacific title. And I love this kind of double title run of kind of the mid-card titles, if you will. The secondary title. The not red belt title. This is good. And it got me thinking along the lines of Stardom, and it's quite a lot of, you know, single belts in that promotion right now, and a lot of that has to do with New Japan with the IWGP and Strong title. Now you got the red and white belt there, and I'm like, would it be the worst idea to have, you know, after all this New Japan stuff is kind of come and gone, would it be the worst idea to have the white belt and IWGP belt be just kind of defended with one person? And would that give it more value? Because they're already kind of ruining some optics there with certain titles going above the white belt. And I think just having something like a Mirai Mayu match might have some merit to it, right? And then you just have the one champion. And that's what this Minami Toyota situation reminds me of, and I'm not opposed to it. But as for the match itself, but yeah, I do agree with this whole double title thing, because if you can't concentrate on two, just concentrate on one, and it does make it a little better. So the build-up, I thought, over the last few months with Takako Inoue and how she's been able to get herself over, how she's improved in the ring in 1994, and she's been kind of one of those projects as well with LCO, clearly, in my mind. This was a big match for her and a big match to show out. And she did. I thought she absolutely delivered. She looks great. She's got the new gear. This was a culmination of a lot of her strides that she's made. And this was a big time match. It felt big to me. It felt great. As the match went on, we had some good energy, good heat to it. Minami Toyota's flipping and flying all over the place. And Takako's just here to throw knees and throw shin kicks, right? This was a phenomenal display of improvement and just high octane, just wall to wall action. It is very enjoyable. We're not locking in holds for minutes and minutes on end just to not sell it and run around the ring. We're just trying to beat each other into the mat and have a good match. They delivered. If you go to Cage Match, this match has an 8.31. Currently off a small amount of votes, only 12, but I think that's a good spot for it. Wrestling Observer went 4.25 in the match, and I gotta agree, I'm right there with all of this, right? If I could give a match 8.3, I would, because that's kind of where I'm at. I'm right at that 4.25 star range. The match begins with Minami Toyota going to the top rope, or jumping to the top rope with the no hands and going back for a springboard plancha, and Takako just moves out of the way via Samoa Joe-esque, and crowd pops for that. Later in the match, Minami Toyota's doing moonsaults and missing. Takako's flying off the top with the Norio Tateno knee, missing that. Everyone's like just missing their big moves. And what happens is the other person will capitalize on the top rope miss or big move miss, and then hit like a big German. In Toyota's case, after Inoue misses the flying knee, she just grabs her for a straitjacket German suplex deal, you know, for big near falls. And that's how a lot of this match was built. And then when Toyota was kind of on the defensive and trying for a big comeback, there's a moment where she just torpedoes through the rope and just crashes into the guardrail as Takako does her best to try to catch her. And you see some other rookie on the outside playing like a pancake to try to catch Toyota so she doesn't go into the guardrail head first. That was a big match turnaround moment there. More near falls off of varying degrees of suplexes, cutie specials and the like. Big knee drops. And Toyota, off of one of those misses, hits the big JOCS for the win. There was a great near fall for Takako when Toyota was going up for a moonsault. And Takako hits her over-the-shoulder backdrop, which just looks like it's going to decapitate Toyota, because the way she just folds in half on some of these moves. I mean, there was multiple instances where Toyota takes some sort of drop and she's folded in half. And she's doing it herself, you can tell. And she's just this rubber band out there. Very much kind of Mayu Itani with, if your neck's made of rubber, how can it break situation. It just bends. So yeah, JOCS ends this. It's definitely one of my more favorite matches of 1994 that I've seen. Yeah, there's varying degrees of tags that you can point to. The hand match of Hota and Kong definitely sticks out. This is a moment where the match sticks out to me. This was great. Very much is a high recommendation for me. Toyota retains the IWA All Pacific title. She looks great with the purple and white belt. Enjoyable match, and we're on the road to Big Egg. Our next stop is the Big Egg Wrestle Universe show. Big Egg Joshi. Here we are. We got the official announcement of the card. FMW and LLPW have done maneuvers to get various people on there. JWP was much more stable as they put people on the card. And look forward to however I'm going to decide to cover Big Egg in the next episode. But this was Classics 99. Hope you enjoyed. See you next time.